Yo, 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 what's up, everyone, and welcome to the 32nd episode of the Sad Nasi EDH podcast, ranking threats and how to play from the back burner. Joining me, as always, is O3 Adam, better known as Poppy Phobia.
What's up, everybody?
And also joining us today is the resident Chad, the chattiest of Chad Nauses, Charlie, otherwise known as Valhalla C.
How's it going, everybody?
Let's hop right into it.
Yeah, so thanks, Kian. So to start with, we have some sponsors to shout out for today's episode. So as always, thank you to The Mana Vault. The Mana Vault is the newest LGS to hit up the Milwaukee County area. It's like the number one LGS for CEDH in our area. They're holding like 64-person CDH tournaments. They're holding big legacy events. It's all proxy friendly, and they're really supporting our community in a really good way. And so we want to support them, and we want to thank them for sponsoring our channel and helping us out a little bit. Our other sponsor of the show is Eminence Gaming. Eminence is running the largest CDH tournaments in the United States right now. Their software Command Tower has a grip on like over 130 LGSs around the nation. So they're really pushing CDH, and not only that, but making it accessible to everybody all around the world. So shouts out to them, and special thanks to them for sponsoring our channel. You can always follow them on Reddit. Or not on Reddit, why did I say that? On like Discord and Facebook, and you can get all their information.
Twitter.
Twitter. They're all on Twitter. You know, anywhere that social media exists, you could probably find them. So let's shout out all of our patrons. So thank you to Doot, Usable Object, Scorish, MP Pfefferman, Jeff Bezos, Domino, Blargarg, Just Ice, Geos Justin, and our Chadnaz patron who happens to be with us today, Valhalla C. If you'd like to support us as well, you can do so at patreon.com/sadnaz, and you too can get a shout out. Other than that, today we are talking about how to rank threats at the table and how you can recover from a disadvantaged board state. But before we get into that, we have our guest, Charlie, with us. So, Charlie, for people that don't know you, I mean, if they frequent the Sadnaz Discord at all, or they're hanging out, if they're in the patron chat, they know you, they know of you. You're always talking about, you know, all the games that you're playing, because you're a military man and you're playing on a on a small island out there and always kind of sharing your experiences with us. So why don't you tell the people who you are?
Yeah, it's great to be here. In the Coast Guard about 19 years. Got about a year to go before I retire. Small island off of Massachusetts called Nantucket. Super busy during the summers, completely dead during the winters. So that means I got to get my fix through Spell Table. Hopped on Sadnaz probably about 5 months ago. Everybody's awesome. Can't keep up with Dude and his bling, so I just stopped posting. I thought I was up there, but Dude's got me beat. Been playing Magic since Revise. What was that, 94, maybe 95? Took a little bit of a hiatus, 2002, 2003. And then picked back up in 2016, played Modern for about 3 or 4 years competitively. After that, got into Commander and haven't looked back. So, yeah.
Wow, that's awesome. Dude, all the way back in Revised.
Yeah.
That's that's a long time playing Magic.
Long time.
Yeah. It's funny. You're like, I can't keep up with Dude. I don't think anybody can keep up with that guy.
Yeah, Dude's pretty solid. He's pretty consistent with stuff he has. You know.
Yeah, I own my shop, and I can't even like post enough blink in there to pass that guy.
Yeah.
But so you getting into Commander like fairly recently was like CDH kind of like. Like, did you go through that natural progression into CDH? Like where like you and your buddies were playing, decks started getting stronger, one guy's pub stomping somebody else, or did you guys kind of just like, was that draw there immediately to like play at a really competitive level?
I met the group, which back then consisted of about 7 or 8 guys. It's dwindled a little bit since then. I can say with full confidence, we played EDH for like maybe 2 months, and I'm super competitive, so the decks just evolved. I think the joke was they all whispered to each other, they're like, I wonder if this new guy's like plays with like these super powerful cards or Cradle or stuff like that, and I showed up with a Cradle and they were like, all right, we gotta start ordering cards because we're gonna get to the format. So it went into like I think I played Azusa for like 2 months, and then boom, I had a Kess deck. That was fully CDH'd out, and
It only took 2 months.
We just started blasting, dude. We just started blasting. And then it got into
Only way to
foiling
start
and this and
blasting.
that. And now at any given time, like I don't think there are really any jank decks in our play group. Everybody's playing either like Nigila, Tibbet, Blue Farm, Winota, Dawn Waker, like Rog'Sai. They're playing, everybody's playing the best decks.
That's super cool. That's funny. It's like, yeah, I was playing Azusa and then I went straight to Kess. I was like,
Two
oh,
months
Rixir.
later.
What happened?
Yeah, because when I think when we first met, it was at Oktoberfest, and it
Correct.
was just like one of those things where like we were hanging out, just kind of like having a conversation, and I remember it because I was like, man, this guy's like fucking cool. Like we were just like talking about bling and talking about like the cards we were buying, and just like we were both playing. I think at the time at Oka, I was playing like TNT.
TNT Sacred Entry
You were,
donated.
yeah, you were. I
Listen,
think,
don't.
yeah, that was my first, that was my first tournament that I ever went to. And that's where I got like
Same.
immersed in the culture. I think I was like, I played against Charles with one, Charles and Sick Robot one game, and I was like, I know both of these guys from videos. Like, this is crazy. And then I saw Koval, and I tried to talk to him, but he had some dry sense of humor, and I think I was like, I think I'm pissing this guy off, but I caught you guys. I think I went into the top 40 at 3-3-1 and then lost. So I was out, but I was still just ecstatic because it was my first tournament. And I caught you, Adam, at the end of it, and we were spamming about Najila, and I was like, this guy actually agrees with me that I think it's the best deck in the format. Yeah, I was just like, these guys are awesome. So that's how I
Yeah, I
kind of got
mean,
into
little
Sadnos.
do people know, I've actually been an Ajila pilot my whole life. Yeah, so
Get out of here.
Out of the womb
no,
with the Blade Blossom, you know?
yep.
Right.
I revealed the spoilers for it when it first
Yeah.
came out. No,
Yeah.
but
Yeah. Yeah.
yeah, that was like a yeah, that was wow. Oka was like such a different time in the and like what I feel
CDH
like
world.
was like in the CDH world. Yeah, because like. When I was playing TNT, like the mentality of decks and like play patterns was very different. It was still very mid range. I remember that
Sure.
tournament was like the most I'd ever seen green played in my life, right? Because like we were playing like against Yasan decks, tons of TNT variations, like tons of
Green
green
bad.
stuff. Super heavy, like creature. Like I don't like at the time, because you were on it too, right? Because like the like Pongo's Nigila like mid-range list with like all the creature combos and stuff and like running like Chatterfang in the 99 and stuff like just like a different mentality of
Yeah.
like what the meta looked like
Yeah, the
and
OG tempo
how
version.
stuff is yeah and how stuff has evolved lately is kind of crazy.
It is.
Because
It
like
is.
it's like everybody's going fast, everybody's spewing shit on the table. And the pace of play seems a lot faster.
Absolutely.
And I think the skill level is going up too. And with that, I mean, every day you can like all you want, Kian, but like I think that the skill level is getting higher up there. Like you're starting to see like competitive players kind of sit at that top 16 mark. And it's like a lot of the same names, a lot of, like we were starting to see a threshold of like what would essentially be considered the pro CDH like echelon, and it's evolving and it's starting to grow. So with that, I think today's topic kind of blends into that really well, because we're talking about like the evolution of the game and how things have evolved and how our thought process and how we analyze things has evolved. And so then today we're talking about like ranking threats and playing from a disadvantage, which I think is like one of the most useful skills that you can have, like knowing when you're not, you know, when your back is against the wall and how to play differently and change your play patterns to adjust to that, I think is like really important. So to start with, I think we're gonna chat a little bit about how we specifically distinguish threats at the table. So Charlie, as our guest, I'll let you kind of go first. But when you're looking at like threat assessment and the things that like kind of put you on high alert when you're playing at a game, like how do you kind of try to determine who's the threat, what the threats are, and the things that you look out for when you're playing a game of CDH?
Yeah, to me, it's a good question, and it's a hard question to answer. There's a lot of different things that come into play for me personally, when determining like what an actual threat is. Turn order is a big thing. Where am I in turn order? Am I going after someone playing a like a quote unquote threat? Am I worried about someone playing what I would be considered like a threat? Turn order is very, very big. Before I even sit down, I look at where I am, what decks are being played, and my role in the pod is in general. And to really think about like what is my role? Is my role to like, as you guys say, room? Is my role to like play a mid-range game plan? Is it to politic? How hard am I going to have to politic in this game? So determining a threat, it also really comes down to like I got to wait for someone to play something, and then either that specific card or that player in general is or could be a threat. So to really just sum it up, a threat could be or something could be threatening to me, but beneficial to somebody else. So I think the best thing you can do when something drops is use politicking as best as possible.
I like that. I like that answer.
Not sure if that answers the question, but yeah.
No, I think you did a good job. Kian, when you're like analyzing threat, do you think that there's anything you could add on to like what Charlie was saying, or do you kind of view things differently?
Right when I sit down, definitely I'm doing what you're doing, right? Like, what's my turn order? What's my seat at the table? Am I going to be the control deck that's just going to sit behind Heuristic Study all game, which is most of the time yes, or am I going to be turbo because there's like a few answers? Players definitely, if I know them. I think definitely like the first couple turns, mulliganing, like if they mulliganed aggressively for like down to three or four or five, then I kind of know that okay, maybe they're not the threat. But if they're on like a Rog deck, they could have just hard mulled for the ad nause. And like just explaining like play patterns of other decks. I've been doing this a lot recently. I've just been voicing like a play pattern that a player could have and be like, okay, this is what they could have. I don't have an answer for it. Do you have an answer for it? And like create some sort of dialogue to like paint that person in like a negative light or like making them the threat. Even though they might not have it or they may have it. Think just reading what like their hands and like mana and like board state tells you is how you distinguish the threat, along with what you're saying, Charlie.
That's definitely pretty like I think a lot of that is very like good information when you're trying to like determine who the threat is at the table. I think that like a lot of the stuff that you guys have touched on should be like what every player should be doing. Like if you're going to sit down at a table, right, you immediately should determine that the person going first is like is already a threat. Like they have a huge advantage over the rest of the table. So
Yeah,
like
I
you
feel
should
like we went
always,
over the basics, like the
And I think that that should always be like priority number one is like, okay, seat order like determines threat, right? Mulligans I thought was really good because yeah, like people like keeping first sevens is either like I think it's something to keep in mind. Although to be honest, sometimes I'm more scared of the lower mulligans because they're mulliganing to something like Heuristic Study or ad nauseam or something with some type of significance, especially like mulls to five. Bro, mulls to five scare the shit out of me. I'm like five is still a lot of good cards and like you never know what could come out of that. I think that like there's a lot of decks that I think immediately strike me as like threats. Like Grixis decks, I think. When you have decks like Tivit lately has been a huge like no matter what, that deck's a threat to me. Because like you have to like respect it. It has like that Nigella effect where it kind of wins out of nowhere. And so like stuff like that I analyze a lot for threat assessment. And then the big one that I think and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that I think that you guys skipped over is I think the person at the table who talks the most is always a threat, in my opinion. So, like when I'm sitting down at a table, when there's a player that's always talking or trying to direct the pace of play or try to push play in a specific direction, I immediately analyze them as like, this person is a threat because they can have the ability, like through politics, to dictate how this game will take place. And if you let someone politic a table, it's like very easy to win that the game from there. So like when you kind of touched on Kian, how you were like, oh, I've recently like been creating dialogue and asking questions and yada, yada, yada. I would like be at that table. Like, yeah, Kian's going to win. Like, you guys don't listen to Kian. Don't listen to what he's doing. He's trying to get you guys to reveal information. You should pass priority to him and let him handle things because he's
Most of the time I'm being truthful. There's that other 15% of the time where I'm going to sandbag per usual, but like, I feel like I know Koval touched on it in like both of our episodes, just like being honest and like making sure you guys don't lose to the threat or like to the stack answer or like the Thoracle consult, you know, like the thing that you're going to lose the game on the set, whatever words I'm being yeah. dumb, but you guys get, you guys get what I'm saying though. Right.
So like you're saying cast your spells and
yeah, don't sandbag hashtag Moxmasters stuff.
Yeah. It's who's the greatest example that I can think of this? Amazing player, obviously, doesn't need anything. Nothing has to be said about him, but Reed is like one of the best politickers I've ever heard. Like the analogy of like he could sell a ketchup popsicle to a woman in white gloves is like
true.
He just, I remember sitting in the game with him and what he was saying. I almost felt powerless. I felt like a baby, like a newborn baby. I was like, how am I going to say anything over this guy and have somebody believe me? And like Charles the Mono White guy was another like great at politics. I guess if you're playing stacks, you've got to be good at that. I agree with everything you guys just said. Absolutely. Yeah.
Those are the like political players I think are like, you got to watch out for them. And we talk about it a lot in our episodes because like we really enjoy politics as like a gameplay, like feature, I guess you could call it a feature. I don't know.
Sure.
Some people hate it, but like we all play very like politically. I think I'm like usually the best example of that. But Kian recently has been like politicking his ass off in games. And I can hear him across the room, like flapping and flocking and like trying to divert threat and stuff.
I'm practicing.
Like,
well, I think it also depends on too. Like, so if you're going to play with your normal group of like 6, 7, 8 guys, I mean, you just opened the mana vault. So you're going to get a normal group of maybe like 15, 20 people. Right. Yeah. So I think your level of politicking goes up the more fresh faces you have.
Oh yeah, for sure.
This is why it's so hard at a tournament because there's 160 people. And you're not usually playing anybody twice unless you're getting into the top 16. But to politic with random people, it's a skill. It's like
poker. It's hard.
Yeah, it's a skill. And that takes practice. So just doing it with your Friday night Magic Kitchen table guys is one thing. They can read me like a poker hand. And I can read all of them like a poker hand. But going to a tournament, like I find myself a little quiet most of the time, and that's also perceived as a threat too. You said a lot of people, like if someone overly talks, it's kind of like, all right, you want to be like, can you calm down? But silence is also like, that's a big one too. Body gestures, all sorts of stuff you can throw into this. So yeah,
see, we have the benefit of getting to pretend that we're YouTubers, right? So when we go into tournaments, if we just start talking, people are like, oh, that's normal for them, right?
Bro, we got a podcast, dude. Hey, what's up? I'm from Sadness. How's it going?
Yeah.
So anyways, Najeel player's the threat. You guys got answers for this?
That's a good point. Do your Sadness jerseys, do you think they help you or do you think they deter from, you know what I mean?
I mean, I feel like every
time Adam doesn't get to answer this question because he doesn't play Magic anymore.
I top four two tournaments. I'll take this question. In my jersey.
Yeah. How about sitting across the table from like Brian Cook or Brian Koval? Or do you think people just naturally get intimidated and don't play to the best of their abilities?
Let it be known that Brian Cook does not scare me. Okay, but Koval, on the other hand, I'd be terrified to sit at a table with Koval. That guy's like, I played a game with him in Vegas where I was like doing my thing. So like I wasn't wearing my jersey or anything, but I was like doing my politics game, like diverting the table and doing all this stuff. And Colville literally like turns to me, like gestures the table to be quiet and says, "You can talk all you want, but it's not going to work." Like just flat out to the middle of the table. And then like I lost all my power. It just went away.
Yeah, one white man in silence. Like, yeah, take that. You know,
I was like, oh, shit. Yeah. But I'm curious on what you think, Ian. Like, do you think that like your internet prowess hurts you or helps you in events?
I don't even like whenever I've only been to two events, right? So like Oko, we were like small, like we met like some people, right? Like at Punt City 2, I met Charlie for the first time, which is great. Met a couple other people. But I felt like just wearing the drill, like it didn't really matter. Like, I don't know. Maybe that was just me.
Like in game, you didn't feel like people were like, because like I've played games with Ian and like I make Ian the threat in the game.
Yeah. That's you're a comedian MTG,
right? Like, oh, sure. Dude, you're so popular and you win so many events. And then now everybody's like, oh, we can't let that guy win.
Well, no one really. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Ian.
Go.
Ian's amazing, but at Punt City 2, it was like Winota got hated out, you know, and granted, like one trigger or not, I mean, that could be a Magusin Moon and we don't play Magic anymore, but in that case, like maybe it did hurt. I don't know. That's not really for me to say, but like maybe the reputation and playing Winota, a deck that you created, maybe it came back to bite you. I don't know.
I feel like that. Like everybody, like Winota kind of took CDH by storm for like a couple months. And then everybody's like, fuck Winota. Anytime this hits the board, we're killing it. We're forcing it. You know, that's how you beat the deck. And I feel like in that, like Mike made it because he's also a political player, right? So like, because he's play stacks, like great guy. But I feel like taking a deck that everybody knows is a threat and is very linear, like just, you're just shooting yourself in the foot, right? Because like everybody knows Blue Farm and like Najeela are like really good decks as well as Rog'Sai. But like they have multiple game plans instead of just the Rube Goldberg machine of Magic. Like you can sip Iron Risk Starter, you got Thoracool Consult, you got a bunch of these other things.
So kind of like evolving from that. So like we discuss like how we distinguish threats at the table, what we think of those types of threats. But do you ever like maybe misguide yourself on like what the threat is, or sometimes misread the board state, and then maybe you think something or perceive something as a threat and divert your attention away from something else, and then does that like affect the game in any sort of way? As you're playing is I guess where I'm trying to get with this, because like sometimes I feel as though I will do a lot of work where I am like diverting attention, pointing out these threats, and then come to find out that the person in turn order before that person just has it instead. And you know, went to blow up their board state, get rid of their commander, do all these things to prevent them from winning it. And it wasn't even the person to worry about. So I'm curious if you have any experience, Charlie, with like misreading board states or how you think that that can sometimes affect the game, specifically in terms of when you're trying to, you know, possibly win.
Yeah, misreading a board state can definitely negatively affect the game. I don't think it's really there's anything positive to come out about it. You're unintentionally making a mistake. It happens to everybody. The best way that I can feel, the best way to go about not misreading a board state is, I find, to just take your time. Think, like I said before, politic with the other players. Also come up with a game plan. If I make play A, what is likely going to be the next play by another player? And do I have an answer for that? Or can somebody else back that play up or back my play up? Can I persuade another player to back me up or deal with this Dranith Magistrate? I'm going to go for a breach line. He's a mono green deck. Does he have endurance though? So like, there's lots of different ways to think about all this kind of stuff. The best thing, and sometimes you are got, he's got the auto aura for the breach and you're just like through a Grand Abolisher, you tapped out, your LED's already in the bin. You like don't have an, it's like, okay, all right. Sometimes they got your number. Yeah, I think I'm very cautious. I'm much, I guess I adopt the same sort of mindset. We keep using his name. Obviously, he's a great player. Koval's like, I don't want to go for the win first, right? As Blue Farm player, I almost never go for the win first because I'm a very cautious person. And that translates even into Magic. Even if I have the win, I'll usually wait another full turn rotation to see if I can draw some more cards, get a couple more Timna hits in, maybe get a Chrom trigger or two, and wait till I'm 1,000% sure before I go for anything. There are other guys like who did it at Punt City too. The turn one with Thoracle win off the
Oh,
gemstone.
Spencer.
Spencer, like you guys like save room. Spencer was just like, dude, I'm going for this thing. And I think was Brian Cook in that pot?
That
Yeah,
game
Brian.
one of the whole
Brian
city.
Cook's like, no one kept turn zero interaction. You know what I mean? And this is a
Spencer
simple
Cokefield
case.
classic.
Yeah, this is a simple case of like Winota, Godfather, like these decks stop winning when people just automatically like are tired of losing to them. So Rod, like Rajsai or like, no one could have anticipated that Spencer had that because he's playing two like kind of more mid-rangey commanders, but like he went for it. I don't know if I would have even went for that because that to me is just like I'm kind of blown out now. But dude, he was like Punt City 2, I'm here for one thing, let's jam.
Let's
Boom.
go.
And no one had an answer. And it was like, yeah.
No,
You gotta go for it, vroom.
yeah. I think Kian and I are like prime examples of people that misread board states.
Really?
Like I played in a tournament where like I was playing into top four, and it's like the turn before time, it gets to my turn, and I'm like, man, if I top deck a tutor, I can win this game. And I flipped my top card, and it was like Demonic Tutor. And I'm like, let's fucking go. I had just enough mana to like Demonic Tutor for Savine's Reclamation. I had my Underworld Breach and my LED in the bin with Brain Freeze in my hand. I was like, that's it. This is game over. I just won. So I Demonic Tutor, I get my Savines. I Savines my Breach back. I've got everything in my yard. I go to cast my LED, and this guy's like, okay, response. and he like, what's the land that blows up shit like Blasting Station, right?
But Juju,
Not
but
Bajuju,
Jukebug,
no, like on the battlefield. No,
Blast Zone.
on the battlefield.
Oh,
It's like,
Blast Zone.
yeah, Blast Zone. He had Blast Zone on two and just Blast Zoned my Breach.
Oof.
And I just lost the game. And I was like, God damn it.
You forget
So
with some of
I don't
those
think
little
that's
cards.
misreading the board
Ooh.
state. I think that's just dying to onboard effects.
That's how did I that's the definition of misreading the board state.
I mean, it's like playing your Thoracle into a what's the land? Draw three,
Torpor
discard.
Orb, or like,
Keflin,
because Kian did that the other day.
Listen, it
No,
was low. Fuck it.
no. Like Cephalid Coliseum. Like people are crafty too. They'll be like land for turn, and you're like, what land? You have to ask them what land is that, and it's like, oh, it's a Cephalid Coliseum. Okay, thank you very much. Like, but people won't tell you. You know what I mean? So there's sneaky ways to go about it too. But yeah, sometimes you're like, what does Blast Zone do again? And whether it's just from pure laziness or just, you weren't thinking, but I could see that happening a lot.
My favorites is like when someone's got a lab man out and they have the horizon lands in play and there's like a rule of law and they're waiting for everyone to cast a spell so they can demonic consultation their library and crack their horizon land to draw a card. And like everybody's like, oh, I never saw that coming. And it's like it's all on board, right? Like it's very easy to notice. But yeah, like it's so easy to misread the board state and to just like ignore something or not realize it. Kian, you're the expert about this, so why don't you kind of
Am I
elaborate?
the expert?
I think so.
I feel like I mess up a lot. I make a lot of bonk bonk plays that like are like really bad, but I feel like when it comes to like games that are like actually mattering, like I'll sit there and think about it, think about possible play patterns. What could the opponents have? I don't, everybody discussed the negatives, but I want to bring out the positives, right? This is a political or political aspect that can be useful to you guys at home and on the cast. If you misread the board state of a person that you perceive as a threat and they have nothing, then you might be able to get some information from your opponents. Say like, hey, I only have one answer to this Rocko player. He could dockside into Wirewood Samael, bounce Rocko, find Felidar Guardian, go off. And like, say he doesn't have any of that. They'll let you know about their creature answers for your Ranger Captain, or like, you know, just gleaning information from a mistake that you made.
I have no idea what you meant when you said that, because you said if you perceive someone as a threat at the table and they're not, and then you misread their board state, you'll gain information. And I was like, wait, but if they're not the threat.
Because you're asking the other two players, like, this guy's the threat right now. Like, do we have anything to solve the problem?
I see. And then you're gleaning information from your opponents because you're perceiving someone as the threat. But then
they have like four lands or something.
That sounds like some shit you would do. You'd be like, this guy's about to win. And I stared at his hand. He's got nothing. just like only mana producers and rituals. Yeah. I mean, that might be the only benefit of it. I don't think there's a lot of benefits.
There's really no benefit. I think it
just affects your game in like a negative way if you misread the board state, and it can affect affect the game because your opponents will then misread it as well. Especially if you're like a vocal player or someone that dictates the pace of play.
Yeah.
And if everyone is misreading the threat, you're just going to get burned, and you're going to get like burned hard.
True. Feels so bad when you're the vocal player at the pod and you're like, this guy's a threat. And then you totally misread it. And another guy wins in priority. And you're like,
I don't know how that happened. But Kian, I think now is your time to shine.
Moving on to the flavor text of the week. It's been so long since I've done one of these.
It's been a while.
For those that don't know what the flavor text of the week is, it's where I can try to stump you and the people on the podcast with the challenging flavor text trivia from Magic's history. All right, you guys ready?
Let's do it.
Are we up first? Let's do it.
You guys are always up first. Okay.
You don't have it ready?
I don't know. Okay.
I'm so bad at this. I took like a 16-year break from Magic, so there's a lot of flavor text I'm missing.
You have more knowledge than me. I started in like
2016. Yeah, Adam sucks. Adam's consistently the worst person.
I've got it once.
Right, ready?
I've got it once.
The rustling of leaves and passing shadow are a dryad's only trance.
This is CDH playable?
Oh, yeah.
Is it Dryad of the Elugian Grove?
No.
Dryad Arbor.
Nope.
Damn. See, we had two. You picked a much more CDH playable Dryad than I picked.
CDH playable too.
Can you say it again?
The rustling of leaves and a passing shadow are a Dryad's only trance.
It's a green card?
Yes.
Okay. That narrows it down. There's not very many playable green cards in CDH.
True. Green bag.
Okay. Or Dryads only. And it says shade. There's some shade in there too. Green Sun's Zenith.
No.
Damn. That was a good guess though.
Yeah, that was decent.
I feel.
Do you guys want a hint?
Yeah, give me a hint.
Yeah, throw a hint.
Good.
I don't know what to do. Like, the hint I was gonna say is would give it away. It's a one casting cost spell, one CMC.
Crop rotation?
No.
One CMC green spell. Oh, what's the other veil? Autumn's Veil?
Yeah. See, I did.
Autumn's Veil? Nice.
Yeah. See, nice. There's only so many green spells in the game.
One CMC. Yeah.
What's the Cody card that they play? The charm?
Oh, Emerald Charm?
Is it Emerald Charm?
Yeah, Emerald Charm.
All right, now for the audiences, your guys' flavor text. Let the wild in. Channel its strength. Fraelise. Bam. It's good to do. Screen bad, though. Bad color. Don't play it.
Yeah, green is
this
bad.
Brought to you by the Sands Green Gang. Anyways, moving on to the disadvantage at the table. So, Charlie, I want to ask you, what constitutes a disadvantage, like at the CDH table?
Sure. Lack of creatures. No hand compared to the rest of the pod. Board state in general. If you are severely behind and the disadvantage is that everybody knows you're behind, that's a very big disadvantage. You could be fainting something or feigning something. You know, all it takes is 2 mana for Dockside and you're back in the game. But there's those things that everybody knows, like the guy's got 2 cards in hand, Rajside, like blew his load and he's got 2 cards in his hand, or his or her hand, and you know Rajside's out. Yeah, that's the, I think those are the telltale signs of like a disadvantage. Low life total. And there's like a big beater on board, like a Ser Ascendant or a Krom or I would say that's the best way to determine being at a disadvantage or determining somebody else is at a disadvantage. General, like I said before, general body language. If someone's like quickly picking up a card, looking at it and putting it down, you know they didn't really draw into anything. That's what I look for personally, you know.
Okay. Would you say a board state or resources in hand are more important in this game? Or format, should I say?
You know, I'm always gonna go back to card advantage. It's one of the biggest things I do early on. I've noticed that my win rate has gone up when I start to, let's say you take a game of CDH and you're like, I'm gonna always try for a turn 1 Ristic or fish, or a turn 2 at the latest Ristic or fish. Like, you always jam card draw. Always. If you have a tutor, it's not going to grab a Dockside or something like that. It's going to grab a fish, or it's going to grab a Ristic. I've noticed that your win percentage goes up because card draw equates to more wins. You have more resources in your hand as long as your lands get to cast those spells. But more card draw is what I always lean into when I'm trying to get out of a hole, if I ever find myself in a hole. I want to draw more cards. I want to interact with my opponents, you know?
Yeah. I agree on that. And I feel like that's, Adam, I'll toss the question to you next, but after this comment, I feel like that's a recent trend. Like in the last couple months, I feel like there's been like a play pattern shift in like most CDH players. Like, why tutor for a win con when I can tutor for like a Mystic Remora, a Ristic Study, Esper Sentinel, mm-hmm. you know, these mm-hmm. card advantage engines, because the more cards you draw, like you were saying, the higher win percentages, because you just have so many good cards that you are available to you. So it's my comment. Adam, you got any comments on that? Yeah. Why are you laughing, huh? Tom, bro, you work bonk on, bonk 03?
You got to work on your transitions, man. But so in my opinion, like with like playing at a disadvantage, I think you touched on like a lot of like the really important stuff, Charlie, like cards in hand, like resource management is a big thing. I think that like trying to be the first one to go off can lead you at a disadvantage compared to the rest of the table. Usually you'll see most interactions spent on your win attempt, and then you're kind of playing catch up from that point on. I think that's why mm-hmm. we preach a lot that like you don't have to win now. You can always win 5 turns later. Because sometimes you get got by people that not having anything, but sometimes that risk isn't worth it, especially when you're jamming into games with like 2 Ristic Studies on board and 2 Mystic Remoras, which like I think as we continue to play, we find ourselves in more and more often. Mm-hmm. These like really bogged up mid-range board states because all these people either had tried to go off and failed or are trying to win over each other at the same time. And okay. So I think that like that you can find yourself at like a really big disadvantage there. I also think that like disadvantages come in this like social political game. When like you were saying, Charlie, like sometimes like by being too quiet, you're at a disadvantage from the rest of the players because your input or your perceived threat assessment doesn't get acknowledged and mm-hmm. Or you get perceived or acknowledged as the threat, which can be like a really big issue in the game. Sure. And so there's like a lot of disadvantages that I think that can come from that. And playing at a disadvantage is like not fun at all. Playing from behind really sucks. It's just like very difficult to claw your way back up, especially because you're clawing your way back up against like three other players. In like 1v1 formats, you're playing at a disadvantage usually means that you're a card behind or a resource behind, right? Or like they're able to swing into you freely and you don't have any blockers. So how can you change that? Like I got to dig for a wipe, right? Or stuff like that. Whereas like in CDH, if you're disadvantaged against three other players, it's very hard to come back from that game. And usually the way that you do come back from it is by the other players also becoming disadvantaged. You know, stopping each other and fighting through their own problems until eventually all resources are spent, where you who has just been biding their time in the background sometimes come out on top because you just happen to have the most resources in the end. So there's like a lot to analyze when it comes to like what constitutes a disadvantage at the table. But now that we've kind of like defined that a little bit, I want to know how you play while disadvantaged. Like when you're playing from behind, do you kind of change your game plan a little bit? Do you like tutor differently? Do you like how much does it affect your gameplay once you're behind? Or do you kind of just sit back and just hope that you're drawing cards and that that'll be good enough? I know as like an Agila player, sometimes that's like the mentality I have is like, well, my card density is so intense and my win cons are so good that if I have Najila out, even at a disadvantage, I can still win this game.
Sure.
I'm curious if you feel that way or if you sometimes try to like your game plan shifts once you're at a disadvantage.
Yeah, that totally depends on what deck I'm playing, how well the deck can grind. You know, if I play, I usually play three decks, Najila, Blue Farm, and Dawnwaker. I also have Winota, but I really don't play her much. So Najila's not really a mid-range deck. At least the new lists are not mid-range at all. You're going really fast is what you're trying to do. She has the ability to grind, but you gotta have a card draw engine in the command zone because there's no inherent card draw from the commander. Blue Farm and Dawnwaker are completely different. Blue Farm is like I think it's way better at grinding than Dawnwaker. Dawnwaker still has its explosive starts. And you pop in early, like a training grounds or like a quick Zerda, and you're able to like a Seedborn is just the dream, and you're able to accrue value over an entire turn cycle. But then again, makes you the threat right away. Seedborn is like it's one of my favorite cards, but to getting into stick for a full turn rotation is everybody's dream. It just never happens. Blue Farm again is, you know, both commanders are card draw, so. From a disadvantage, I've got to stick Timna, Krom on top of my Esper Sentinel, like Rhystic Buddy, Mystic Remora, or Rhystic Study in itself. That's five different things in my deck that are going to give me card draw. Dawnwaker, it's just Thrasios. And then Najila. The good thing about Najila is like just turn sideways. That's a clock. True. So completely playing from disadvantage. It's always going to be for me a card draw engine most of the time, unless there's like a really weird opening and I'm like, okay, I can culling the weak this creature and slam on Ad Nauseam or something like that. But then again, now you got to think of your life total. I mean, I've Nauseam at 18 life before just to see if I can get five or six good cards in my hand. But the dream is really like 30 plus. I usually abandon a Nauseam at like, really abandon it at like 25, 30 life. And it also depends on the pod. Am I playing against three other really good players?
Kian starts abandoning his Nauseam at like 40.
Well, I mean, if you're playing Sarah Ascendant, you'll get above 40 most games. and plus, a lot of lists don't play Peer into the Abyss anymore. You know what I mean? Even though a couple are now like they're starting to tech it back in, which I think is really interesting. People are starting to play these like, not to get off topic, but they're starting to play these old school cards again, like Alchemist Retrieval and Peer, and like some are running the three wheel package. It's kind of interesting to like see all these lists and they're performing. So it's like, okay, does that mean I need to put Peer back in? But
please don't.
Yeah, I know. Seven off of Nauseam feels really, really, really bad. Yeah. But yeah, card draw you want to draw cards, get yourself back in the game. You want to draw Dockside, get yourself back in the game. If it's combat related, like you want to stick a big creature down or a creature to like negate some of the combat. And then the other times, like sometimes you're just out. And that's when I would try and politic and be like, hey, I got two cards in my hand. Like if you have a wheel, I would suggest you wheel to like, I can help you deal with this threat. I can help you deal with this player. You know, I played a game with Alana who's like, No wonder she makes every top 60. I want that. I want her to win a tournament so bad. But she was like, she's one of the smartest players that I played with. Awesome at politicking. And she's like, if you do this, I can help you, you know, land this or get a wheel going or, you know, it was just like, it's refreshing to play with people like that, that not losing is winning.
Yeah.
That's very hard thing to grasp in CDH. Like something may stink really, really bad. Like this is gonna blow me out so bad. But if there's nothing you can do about it, just surviving is actually like winning. So play to not lose is the biggest thing I could say.
Play
Like
to
that.
not lose. We should adopt that philosophy, Kian, because I feel like sometimes we do the opposite. We play to lose, and a little loose as well. And it costs us some games sometimes.
Sometimes. But I feel like
Sometimes.
that's always at like, I wouldn't say for fun games, but like, kind of just dicking around games.
I don't dick around. Every game is fucking do or die, man. Like,
That's
are you kidding me? It's like my
fair.
life fucking depends on it. What about you, Kian? How do you play in a disadvantage? Because you're usually like a disadvantaged player, you know? Usually down bad at the
What,
table,
mentally
so
or like
just
magic wise?
all around.
I like how you brought up politicking when you're like pretty at a disadvantaged state, because that's what I was gonna bring up too. Like you can leave like hey man, I got two cards in hand, two lands.
You start
Like
begging. You're
yeah,
like, please.
you grovel. You grovel and it wins games sometimes.
You get on the floor and you cry and you're like, please.
I can't say the things I do on a podcast. Okay, we'll just leave it at that. But yeah, I feel like searching for like a card advantage engine if you're like on a low mull. So like Esper Sentinel, all the like Mystic, Ristic, yada yada yada. And I feel like that's why Blue Farm is such a consistently top deck, because you can mull safely down to three, and then you'll still have a fighting shot if you get to develop like your Timna, your Crom, your Esper Sentinel. But
Sure.
navigating, if you get blown out in the early turns, navigating through that is gonna be hard. Like you said, you might just lose, which will happen if you go for like an unprotected win, or like you only have one or two pieces of interaction in like a like Ristic or some sort of mid-rangey grindy matchup, or you might just get blown up by a turbo deck like turn one or two, and they might just have the nuts. And I feel like just accepting that and like trying to learn from that is how you s solve being at a disadvantage, but like mo sometimes there's really nothing you can do about it. Just
Sure.
accept it, move on.
There was a quick just a quick recap. I think Koble talked about it in his breakdown at Punt City 2. The match I was in with him, I was going first, I think, on Najeela, then it was a Winota, then a Taim, then Koble on TNK. And I'm glad he said it, because I was thinking it he, like before the match even started, or maybe it was after turn one. He's like, how does Taim work? And I was like, I have no idea how this deck wins. Like, I have no idea. And luckily the Taim player was like, he was down to earth and he was like, this is how I kind of do my thing. But like, talk about being at a disadvantage or threat assessment. Like, you have no idea how a deck pops off. You know what I mean? And that's gonna happen at tournaments. But I'm glad that's a prime example. I'm glad someone said it, because I was thinking it, you know.
You're like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, what is this Taim deck, you know?
That thing was putting up numbers at that event too. Like, and it's a big brewer's advantage. And so, yeah, that's a disadvantage for sure for you if you don't know.
Correct.
And like kind of making yourself aware of that. I know when we had Koval on, he talked about that, about how like if I don't know something, I'll ask, because for two reasons. The first is that like you said, your opponent, like the tie-in player, might not understand that they have a huge advantage at the table. And so they'll divulge all that information and be like, oh, I win with this combo and I do this thing and blah, blah, blah.
Sure,
Whereas like if I was the time player, I might be like, I don't even know how the deck wins, man. I just picked it up this morning, you know? Like, yeah,
I do.
I'd be
That's
like,
broad. Yeah.
I don't play CD. I found this in the parking lot.
Yeah.
But so like it's kind of good to know maybe where you're at, when you're at a disadvantage, or what your disadvantages are, or your downfalls as a player, because you can sometimes recover by kind of asking questions and clawing your way back up and probing for information. So, you know, and like we kind of touched on it a little bit, but like recovering from disadvantages, right? Like drawing cards and trying to, like claw your way back and politicking other players and convincing them to make decisions that are probably more in your benefit, or even if they're not more in your benefit slightly enough that your percentage points are going up just a little bit. I think that we're like big advocates for, like every game of CDH is won on percentage points, right? I mean, even like your placement in a tournament, it's all about your opponent win percentage. So then like clawing your way back up from when you were down, by something like you said, like talking with Alana and being like, oh man, if you can muster a wheel at all, it gives me more cards and I can help you and you can help me, right? Like it might be better for her to have a wheel because she's got a Bergy out, right? But like you're like, I'll take anything right now because I just need something, right? So stuff like that. I think that it's really hard to recover from being in a disadvantage, for sure. I think in Commander specifically, it's the hardest feat to like kind of overtake. And there, and I feel like a lot of times, like coming out on top can be kind of accidental. I found myself in a lot of games where like I was down bad the whole game, begging and pleading. And all of a sudden I like look up and I'm like, oh, I can win right now. Like, how did that happen? Yeah. Like I've had Najeela for five turns and I drew Derevi. Like, oh shit, that's awesome. Right. Or like you just happened to hit intuition when you had no outs in your entire deck, but you hit the intuition and you're like, oh, that's the one thing that could win me the game right now.
Exactly.
So I definitely think that like, don't be discouraged if you're in a disadvantage. Don't be like Kian, don't scoop it up because you're mad and you're angry that you threw the game because you casted your Dockside into a Torpor Orb, right? Like that shit happens and now you're at a disadvantage, but it doesn't mean that you should give up.
I didn't scoop.
Yeah, you did. I mean, you scoop. You came up to me. You're like, I think I want to scoop life. And I was like, no, don't do it, my friend. Yeah.
Scoop, so, scoop was not the term I used.
it's just one of those things where I think that like getting better as a player, you have to learn to like kind of eat some punches sometimes, right? And like understand that like maybe you'd mistimed something or misjudged something, misplayed here or there, and now you're at a disadvantage, and kind of accepting like this is the position I'm in, but how do I claw myself out of it again? Because especially in tournament play, I think that mentality is like really important in tournament play, because if you're not, if you don't have that mentality, then what's going to happen is you're going to go for something, you're going to get got, and then you're going to sit there and you're going to kind of give up on the game and you're not going to pay attention anymore to things. And there's little things that happen in a CDH game that have huge impacts. Combat damage, who's swinging where, what's going where. Even if you have no cards in your hand, you can be one of the most effective players in the game just by communicating things that other players might have trouble seeing. You brought up Reed earlier. I think Reed is a great example of that. I remember his like top 16 game with Kian, or like the top 32 game to get into top 16. This dude had nothing, like no cards in his hand, no nothing. But he was like convincing other players what to do, what to cast, and how to interact with Kian, who was trying to win the game. And it's like he had such a big impact on that game, even though he was at a disadvantage from the rest of the table.
It's funny because that game, when we sit down, because like Reed, like we kind of knew each other, Reed and I. But like after this game, especially and like communicating after I sat down, I was like, oh, well, we're going to lose to Reed talking his ass off again. Everybody laughs like, ha ha. Then Reed was like, I'm not going to do that. Was that like an hour later? How long was that game? That was a long game.
I don't know. I remember the recap. Yeah, it was it seemed like a long game.
I have like 45 minutes of just that game recorded on a SD card. And I'm like, I'm not going to ever get that.
45 minutes was the judge call. Then the other hour was the gameplay.
I'm curious, Charlie, if you have any like closing thoughts on disadvantage, or like how you are, any words of the wise that you would give like players that maybe are curious on how they should handle in-game situations, threat assessment, and disadvantage.
Yeah, to sum it all up, the biggest thing you can do is, and don't stall, but take your time. Take your time, like literally start at each player, go around the table and like look at what they have, look at open mana, This all goes on in like under a minute because obviously you don't want to like take no game actions. But like do a general threat assessment. Think about what you're going to do. Does it make sense? And then make your play. My biggest thing is like take your time, slow down, call a judge. I'm not like too proud to not call a judge. You know, just if you think you have the win and you're like, I'm not sure about this interaction, how does this go? Call a judge, raise your hand and just pull him aside.
Just
My
grab him
biggest
by
thing,
the collar. No.
yeah, grab him, rip him by his throat. No. Yeah. My biggest thing is just honestly, like it's a game you're supposed to have fun, but it's competitive. And I'm as competitive as anybody. And I don't like to lose. But take your time. And I think if you slow down, you will find that your decisions will improve. So that literally sums it up, you
Yeah,
know.
that's really good advice. That sums it up so well. I'm not even going to ask Kian the question.
Wow.
I'm sorry. Do you have
Getting
anything?
rag on. Kian gets a lot of hate here. He gets a lot of hate,
No,
but
it's usually the opposite.
yeah,
Usually I
is
sit
it?
by
Adam gets the
quiet.
hate.
Yeah, usually I sit
Yeah.
by quiet. I just take it.
What do you mean?
But
You sit by quietly. That's cap, bro. You literally, bro. That's so cap. You
take
talk
your
so
time.
much.
Take
You
your
talk so.
time and think about it, and it'll help
Think
you.
about what
And
you're gonna say.
yeah, it'll help you
Yeah.
analyze. No,
Yeah.
it's okay. We're back off after a little hiatus, and I feel like we gotta, Kian's gonna move in with me in like a week here, so I gotta big brother him a little bit and slap him around. So we're gonna make a bunch of new content from in the bedroom. Wait, what?
Whoa.
No.
Hashtag
No, I mean, do you have anything to add, Ken? Like,
Yeah, I
what do you
do.
think?
I feel like there's some ways to not put yourself at a disadvantage, and I think we kind of address that. Like the meta's slowly and like the play patterns are shifting towards it. Last couple months is literally mulligan to a card advantage engine, and then try to just sit behind that. Like that drawing cards is going to be your best spot, even like on a mold of four. Like sitting behind a Mr. Gamora for 3 turns and just letting the table play it out and maybe drawing like a counter spell or something is going to be your
Sure.
best bet, and
Sure.
it's going to increase your win percentage, your win rate. That's all I got. Charlie kind of touched on most of the things, like the mechanical things that you want to be focusing on in a game while you're at a disadvantage. Yeah, just staying cool, thinking about it. Most of the time, you know what you're doing. Think about
Yeah,
matchup.
I think that I think that taking your time is definitely like I think like the biggest piece of advice out of all this, because with just a little bit of patience can go a long way, and you'll feel a lot better about the game actions that you take. And even if you make a misplay, you don't feel as bad about it because you thought it was the best decision in that moment. Whereas rushing through plays sometimes can really hurt. So I really like that explanation. Other than that, I think we're going to move to the cleanup of this episode. So once again, we would like to thank all of our high tier patrons. Thank you to Doot, Usable Object, Senator Tom, Scorish, Unorthodox Bird, MP Pfefferman, Jeff Bezos, Domino, Just Ice, Geos Justin, and special thank you to our ChatNOS patron Charlie for coming on this episode. This was a really cool one. It was like pretty in depth, I feel like, because this is like a topic that sometimes gets ignored. Like threat assessment exists a lot, but like playing from behind and playing at a disadvantage is one that's kind of cool because I feel like nobody really talks about it. Like, oh, what do you do when you're behind? They're just like, oh, you're behind. So eat shit, you know? So it's cool to hear like what other people have to think about like playing at a disadvantage and how that can affect your game decisions and stuff like that. So thank you for like bringing your perspective on, and hopefully we'll have you on again and we'll talk about some more of these like really cool kind of high, I think these I would consider these like higher tier
Definitely not
topics.
for like our normal
Sure,
crowd, I
sure.
feel, because we're more like a people just getting a CDH, but there are some like seasoned CDH players that watch this, and I feel like this was, like a good topic for them, not just like how to get into CDH financially, you know, which isn't like, but you know what I'm saying? Like it was good content for the people that have been around the block, the OGs.
This is the OG episode. Yeah.
Sure. Absolutely.
So thank you for that, Charlie. For those of you that haven't joined the Discord, you better get in there. We have
geopolitical talks.
No, don't bring that up. That was fucking stupid.
There are. Yeah.
Sometimes we can have geopolitical talks, but not primarily. But like, I think I'm just double checking right now because I'm really proud of this. I think we're up to over like 450 people in the Discord. Yo, we almost have 500 people in the Discord, which is like kind of wild. And so it's a fun place. It's a fun time. There's a lot of crazy, goofy shit that goes on in there. Tons of memes. The patron chat is like usually the spot that you're actually going to find real, genuine CDH conversations. And then everything else is just shit that's being spewed out the mouths of the unlimited access that we have in there. But it's a good time, and we have a really good community. So if you want to know more about the format, if you want to get games going, if you want to meet people who are actually active in the community that know a lot about the format, you want to ask questions, I think our Discord is one of the best places to actually get some feedback from your games or get some feedback from some ideas that you have. We have new people in there all the time that will ask a really long question, send us paragraphs of things, and you'll get different responses from everyone, and they'll all have their own input on it, which I think is like one of the coolest parts about our community. Sure. Is that you'll get a lot of help. And you get to choose which opinions you want to take to heart, which is very important. It's not like a hive mind of everybody thinks the same. There's a lot of varying opinions, and everybody kind of respects that. So it's a really good place if you're looking for that type of help in CDH. Other than that, subscribe to our YouTube. We're almost at like 600 subs now. We just keep jumping around. We're on the road to try to get to 1,000 before the end of the year. That would be really cool. That would validate us. I don't know. We'd be like halfway to ITN. We might like get invited to CDH events or something, you know, something.
You guys
cool
are already,
like that.
You're on the road to get validated. You're already validated in my eyes. So
that's,
yeah.
All, we that's all we need. That's all we need.
Yeah. That's what matters. That's what matters. And you can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else that you can find a podcast. And make sure that you just leave a comment, drop us a review, and share us with your friends. That's the big one. Share us with your friends. Show them these episodes. Let them decide if they like us or not. But sharing us around is the best way for our content to grow. And we get to the ability to work with new people, reach new audiences, and continue to make episodes like this. And so with that, thank you again, Charlie, for coming on. It was a great time. And we'll see everybody in a few weeks.